everyone in the tech field wants to do three things: relax, automate, and get paid. There's no other tool out there that can make that more possible than D7. Go over to foolishit.com. Don't forget to use the promo code PodNutsShow20 to save an extra 20%. PodNuts would like to thank Nick Shaw for his continued support.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Geeksters episode 88. It's great to have everybody back this week. We're here with Tim and Mitch. We're just hanging out, enjoying the first Tuesday of the month. So, Tim, how's things going?
Good, buddy. How you doing?
I'm doing really good. I'm doing real, real good. How are things in your, I guess, your east side of the coast compared to me?
Oh my gosh, you just broke my head. I'm east of you. I'm west of the coast, the one I'm closest to. I'm east of your coast, and I'm north of a lot of things. Or so I hear.
No, my head hurts.
Okay. But other than that, I'm doing fine.
Good. We got Mitch Heyman with us, not Hammond. Heyman. See, Heyman. Forget it. I'm not even saying last names today.
And I'm 200 miles east of wherever Tim is. Tim is over there.
All right. Well, then.
So just banged it like
Tim, yeah. Tim's
200 miles east of him.
200 east of him?
220 miles, roughly.
All right. Well, how are you doing then?
Doing good, man. Doing good.
Doing good. We already have a question from the chat room, and they want to know how to ask Tim how the Steelers are doing this year.
I don't know. Have they been playing?
Baseball season is ending, and that's what I'm worried about.
I understand there have been football games, but I don't know that the Steelers have actually been playing. I think they show up to games and that. Yeah. And I don't know. I don't know why Fred. Oh, wait. You know what? You did say somebody. It's Fred.
I did say somebody.
Fred has been... He's always tweaking me about the Steelers, and I don't know why, because he's like, this goes on for 20 minutes, he gets me all jacked up, and he's like, oh, I'm a Steelers fan, too. So I don't, you know, a Steelers fan would never do it to another Steelers fan, Freddie. So I'm just saying, I really think you should really reevaluate things. But no, the Steelers
are... Look what you did.
The Steelers have a terrible season. You know what? It's actually made bearable by the fact the Penguins are coming on and that the Pirates have just... made life worth living again, so in this city anyway. And my kid's still doing the softball thing. She's killing it. So, you know, her team's been doing great. Hey, that's the thing about sports. If you diversify, you find yourself at all times being relatively satisfied. If fully invest in one sport, you know, it's either, you know, you're either like the highest high or you're ready to, you know, just swing. So.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. Baseball, air hockey, couch sitting. Hockey. Diversify.
Yeah.
Diversify. You got to get the little tab, the thing in there. Click and the click, click. Come on, you guys know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, and this Freddie, I see, he asked the question, and then he just like, he doesn't even respond. So why is he even on the show? He's like a troll. He's like our in-house troll. Why?
Fred, look what you did. 3 minutes into the show, troll. You already got him riled up.
I'm all fired up. That's it. I quit. Three minutes in, I just quit. Walk away.
Baumeister out.
And that's it. Mic drop.
No. Tim, please. No,
I actually have a mic to drop. I've never said that. Oh, this is awesome. I've never actually said that I had a mic in front of me to drop. Wow, man. It was apropos for once.
I want you to stay.
Okay, I'll stay.
All right, thanks. That was a close one, folks. I've talked him off the ledge.
Let's do it.
All right, let's do it. Hey, guys. Happy National Cybersecurity Month. Apparently, October has a lot of things. I know it's Breast Cancer Month. I know it's some other stuff. It's also National Cybersecurity Month, which I did not know about. So, happy National Cybersecurity Month. I think we should have a cake. Or at least some pie. I don't know.
Ooh. And eat it, too.
Ooh, there we go. There we go. So, I brought today some stuff to talk about as far as that goes. Some security stuff. Some Windows updates. Stuff, but I wanted to, the first thing I wanted to mention was this today. I briefly mentioned at the beginning of the show, it's the first Tuesday of the month, which of course means it's second Tuesday of the month. What is that? Windows updates.
It means we're a week away from here we go again.
That's right. That means that tomorrow your Microsoft computers may or may not turn on. Actually, today is also Microsoft's, it's actually Patch Tuesday turned 10 today. We almost have a teenager in the Patch Tuesday house.
Ten.
So,
is that right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. 10 years ago, this month, they started doing Windows updates or Microsoft updates. Before that, they would just release patches as needed. But 10 years ago, 10 years ago in 2003, they decided they need to be a little more structured. And so they deemed that every second or first Tuesday of the month, they would do updates. And that was it. So happy 10 years old to Microsoft or Windows updates today.
Well, that was a good thing, too, because, I mean, the whole thing with Windows updates and that, especially then when you wonder what Windows updates were going to break. Not saying that that doesn't still happen, but in the last few years, I think Windows updates have been relatively predictable, that as long as you just kind of kept an eye on things, it wasn't like some impending disaster every single time. But back then, I mean, oh my gosh, it was like, you almost wonder if you just step back and wait and see what happened to everybody else first. But yeah, at least you could plan for it. At least you knew that day was coming. You could schedule around it. Whatever that looked like in your organization, but at least you could plan on them as opposed to coming in, finding something that's broken, and then understanding that, oh, they released updates. I see now.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I completely agree. So with the Microsoft updates that are happening this week, there's 8 updates, includes a critical update for IE 11 on Windows 8 and 8.1. That's right. 8.1 will be released October 18th. So if you are having Windows 8 and you are tired of not having a start button, that's okay. Give it 10 more days and you will have a start button and an option to boot straight to the desktop. Now, I believe there is a workaround currently in place where you can boot straight to the desktop. Don't quote me on that. I don't have a Windows 8 machine. But I think either they're going to make it or make it easier to boot to the desktop and include a start menu. So things like Clamshell, and there's another one out there. We have to pay for it. Those may go away.
Yeah. I can't remember what the one is I've been using on other people's machines. I could not wait for this thing to happen. However, I wonder when it comes out in what way I'm going to be disappointed in it. I mean, will it actually do what I want it to do, which make this Windows 8 but functional in the way I've always known Windows? Or, I don't know. I guess that just having worked in technology long enough, I know that this will disappoint me terribly in some way. I don't know. Have they really said much about it? Is there much going on about? No, I mean,
no. My concern is that you're going to set it up to boot straight to a desktop, so it's going to look more like, you know, our traditional Windows. It's going to have a start button. You're going to click the start button. It's going to take you back to the Metro interface. That's all the start button is going to do. Is going to take you back. I don't know if that's happening. That would be just completely ironic. And then Bill Gates would come up and say, neener, 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 we're not giving you what you want.
Yeah. I guess the other thing, too, is that I don't understand why this had to wait many, many months and be included in a point something update. This to me seems like it very easily could have been deployed in the same way that you download something that's, what, like 100 megabytes. I don't know. I'm just making up numbers here. And install in less than a minute. I see why this should have been such a production.
Oh, no, I completely agree. It should have been an option in Windows 8. You either get the touch interface, which is the squares that everybody knows, because there's no continuity, or you get, you know, the start menu that boots you to a desktop, which has, it's still running Windows 8, but yet it looks like the traditional Windows that we've all have been using for the last 27 years.
Yeah.
Good thing I thought you said that we all come to love.
Well, love, hate, I mean, you know, used to it. So,
right.
You know, I don't know. We'll see what happens. It's not going to come out to the 18th. So don't expect it today on this Patch Tuesday. It's going to be an out of cycle, because it's not really a patch. It's an update. So 8.1 does include some updates, but I think the primary purpose of 8.1 will be the start menu, boot to desktop, all that kind of stuff. It's not critical fixes like this today's Patch Tuesday will fix.
Yeah, what's,
does that make sense?
What's with the nomenclature? So this is something more than an update, but it's something less than a service pack. Is that what point one is supposed to convey?
Right.
Oh, it's right. That's just a cheesy way of selling. Oh. Right. Just call it what it is. Give a service pack one for Windows 8, and it's the shell game where every time. Actually, I'll tell you what it is. It wasn't appropriate to call people cripples anymore, so they start calling them disabled. Well, nobody wants, and at some point, I'm getting it out of order, but at some point, handicapped wasn't good enough. So now people are handicapable. That's
challenged.
No offense to people out there.
I think that people who actually have legitimate disabilities, handicaps, crippling whatevers, I think would actually be more sensitive to what I'm saying than those who don't, in that it's really kind of pandering and I think rude to keep coming up with all these new names for things. If you're disabled, you're disabled. Just call it what it is. I don't need a new name. And society has to just kind of get a grip in that we don't need a new name just because the old one kind of got wore out and develops, I think in people's minds develops some kind of, negative connotation. And maybe I went too far out left field with that. But this whole thing with, updates and service packs and now point ones, what does any of it mean? I mean, don't call it something different just to try and throw off any negative connotations that the last things have. Just call it what it is. If it's a service pack, it's been out for a year now. Aren't we almost due for a service pack for it anyway, based on history? I mean, I'm trying to think how long did it take for the other OSs, the XP, Vista, 7? How long did the first service pack come out?
XP had three of them, right?
But yeah, but you're right, Tim. It's about every year to year and a half they come out with a service pack, and that service pack includes all the updates up until that time. So yeah, I don't know why they didn't make this 8 service pack 1 rather than 8.1.
Well, let's just all agree that Windows 8 is handicapped, and point 1 will make it handicapable.
There you go.
Send all hate mail to. Well, wait. We used to send it. We used to send it to Podnut, so we wouldn't get it.
That's well put, really.
The unbootables at.
Ah, yes. Okay. Anyway.
Yeah, we don't get. We don't even get hate mail. That's how bad we are.
We're not even. Oh. We should try harder. Okay. Well, anyway, so it comes out. I have a Windows 8 machine here, and I'm going to install it immediately, because I want to know what it will do and what it won't, and if I'm going to be happy. And if I'm happy with Windows 8, I'll be the first one to stand up and say it.
There you go. We'll come back to you. Well, we got to see 8:15. So not this episode, not next week's episode. The episode after that will be the 22nd. That's where we'll have 8.1 released.
Okay. Yeah, this is, what is it? Today's the 8th. And you said, it's the
18th.
Week from tomorrow? Wait.
No, it'll be a week from Friday.
Oh, it's not even a Tuesday?
No, it comes out on a Friday.
Oh, my
just enough time
gosh,
for
I so hate way, these people. I hate so, them. They can't. Weird. Okay, so now it's patch. It's point one Friday.
That's right. So if it breaks your machine on a Friday, please call back Monday morning, 5 a.m. Oh. Pacific Standard.
I hate them. I do. So, I hate them. I love them, but I hate them.
We're going to have a lot of. I think I'm going to be busy that weekend. I'm going out of town.
Oh, you're going to be busy with phone calls.
I only have one client who's got Windows 8 on him, so no worries.
Okay, it's a week from. Oh my gosh. Okay, yeah.
Hey Tim, yes, and Martin, let me ask you: What is the percentage of Windows 8 machines that you guys work on? I imagine it's
roughly zero.
Yeah, I have one Windows 8 machine I work on now. I have got another in the mail, but the one coming to me is actually a tablet. So that's a whole, I have a feeling it's going to be very simplistic because it's a tablet. It's a touchscreen tablet. It's made for what Windows 8 is supposed to do. I have a feeling it's going to be very simplistic. But I have one desktop, one kid. He's actually a kid that I support, his parents, and he's constantly getting infected. because you can't put any antivirus on it because it has Windows Defender built into it. That's right. Their version of Microsoft.
You can. You have to disable it. There's a disable thing in there.
Okay. But you go to put like Security Essentials on, and it says, no, Windows Defender's already installed. Well, Windows Defender's installed and already configured. How come it keeps getting more infected than my Windows machines?
Because my sister just got a new laptop with Windows 8, yeah. And it had a demo of whatever, but I took that off, and I had to enable Defender.
Yeah. Well, you're right, Tim. He goes to sites that I don't go to, so.
I'm guessing that's, I mean, every machine how old is he? If he's older than 7 and younger than 25, that thing is, it's shot. I mean, day one. Yeah. So.
A lot of game sites like, you know, Minecraft, and then Minecraft cheats and hacks, and it's like, oh, okay.
Oh, exactly. And yeah, the Minecraft screen savers.
Right.
And now, and then you've got 15 pop-ups.
Exactly.
The pop-ups actually are the screensaver.
Bingo. Bingo, bingo. So what have you guys been working on? You guys can fight for who goes first, though.
Mitch can go first.
Quitter. Come on, Tim.
Oh. Oh, all right. Well, I'll go first.
Oh, now I'm going to step right in front of Mitch.
Go ahead. Yeah, I see. Go ahead, Mitch.
No, you guys are the real technicians. I'm just a pretend guy.
Well, even better, because, you know, we need to know what the common man is working on out there.
Nothing.
Oh, get out of here.
That's not true.
You know what? That's the other thing. Today. That's the other thing. Martin gets all tough when the audio starts up, and Mitch turns into, like, I don't know, the non-tech after all the things you were telling us about before.
All right, you deployed a computer today, Mitch.
Yeah, they, in my office, we one of the girls got upgraded. She went from a Core 2 Duo, it's the same thing that I run. She got an i5, a Lenovo i5. And so I backed up everything, put it on there, and it was pretty uneventful, and everything really worked out well. Except the old computer, nothing was wrong with it. It just had some infections on there, and I cleaned up, and I had that thing running so good. I said, I asked the office manager, you still want me to put this on there? Yeah, we got it. You might as well do it. You know, switch them out. So, but I had it. I mean, the thing was like it was some kind of rogue was on there. Maybe it was partially cleaned up, but it was trying to run, and it was pegging the processes at 100%, so you couldn't really do anything. But I had to manually get rid of it and got it all cleaned up. It was taking like, they were telling me sometimes it would take like 30 minutes to boot up. I got it booting up after cleaning everything up in like 15 seconds to the desktop on the network.
Nice.
So that was pretty good. But they said switch it out anyway, so we'll just use that as a spare.
Yeah.
But I am getting them one. Somebody came to me on the floor in the warehouse, and he said, a very infected Vista machine. So I can't wait for that. Well, actually, I think the name Vista means it is infected already.
Just there it is.
By that, having that name.
Oh, gosh.
You realize it has Vista on it, right? Yeah, that's it right there. That's your problem.
You know, all right.
Actually, my wife
it's
runs
easy
Vista.
To beat up Vista. It was bad in its own way. But Vista was, I mean, it wasn't
If
awful.
You get the updates, yes, it was.
Not
but
toward it, the end.
With the
not
updates.
Now. It's okay.
It's not now.
Windows
no, not
7
now.
Was just that much, was so good. Was just so good. But yeah, Vista.
Better, it was better than ME.
I remember that.
Yeah, that
you guys remember was, Bob?
Oh, yeah, Bob Microsoft Bob.
Remember that? Was that the one with that you look at, like you're looking at a house, and you click on certain things, something like on the wall? It was kind of. It was about the time AOL was really big, and they were doing their. No.
It was something like that. I mean, it was.
It was old stuff.
Yeah, it was one of the things that just didn't work out.
No. They tried it and it failed.
And they actually just let it go, as opposed to the other things they've just forced.
Right. You never saw Bob. Version 2.
No. There was no Bob Point 2. Right, there was Bob. No Bob Fridays. As opposed to Clippy, who still pops up
right.
on the machines from time to time on me.
Wow.
Yeah. Microsoft Bob. Well, I got off a tangent here. Vista. I mean, if you have to use it and it's working, okay. It's not like... It's a sitting there. It's a ticking time bomb. If it's sitting there and it's working for you and it's working, then it's adequate. They did make a lot of improvements over XP, but I think Vista still looks pretty bad after Windows 7 came out. And really, what was the problem with Vista? Well, first of all, they oversold it, and it ended up being slow. They overestimated the hardware requirements, and
the user access control was
awful. They're actually selling some of those machines with just 120.
Well, exactly, and that's the sort of thing that happens when you don't make the OS and the hardware. That's the sort of thing happens. And also, if y'all remember, the big deal was that you can't blame Microsoft, but Microsoft had it. They put it out there, and there was plenty of time. And usually, it was printer manufacturers, of course, but a lot of it. They dropped the ball. They didn't provide adequate drivers, and so. You know, if all of the third parties had actually run with this Vista thing, we would all kind of be laughing about how just kind of dumb it was, as opposed to a complete heartache.
But, I mean, it did, you know, with every failure comes success, and Windows 7 came along, its predecessor, and Windows 7's good. It's a good, stable operating system. So, you know, they had to put out with Vista, you got the new round start menu, you got the, you know, the UAC. So they started integrating a little more of the firewall that came, you know, as a service pack. And you know, I think it was service pack 3 or 2 of XP when they started implementing a Windows firewall. So everything that Windows 7 is built upon failed in Vista, and they just made it better. And I think one of the big primary things that I took away from Windows 7 is I remember when Windows 7 first came out and I started testing with it, they asked techs, what is your opinion? What do you think about it? And we would go back and we would say, this is great, this is great, this is terrible, this is terrible. And they would fix that and they would come back out again and they would say, now what do you think? You know, most of it got fixed, some of it didn't. And they ended up with a decent operating system because they asked for a lot of user input.
Yeah, I was going to say the same thing. I think that if Microsoft is ever remembered for something that they did right in regards to the, you know, the OSs, the Windows OSs, was the beta program that they put together for it. And exactly. So there was a whole year of them releasing a series of beta versions before they got to their release version. And gosh, I mean, 9 months before the beta version was so good. It was literally functional. You could use it.
Right.
I almost wish I could have deployed it in some Vista situations, but I ran it at home on my own bench machine. And I really fell in love with it. Not just because I hated Vista or because I felt XP was out of date. I just felt like it was really, really good operating system. I felt like it was graphically. I thought that it was pretty. It ran well. I tested a number of machines without you know a lot of older machines. I mean, so that you know I saw where even, it wasn't real demanding on the hardware at the time. And so yeah, I loved it. And so after using it, I had time with it. I knew what we were doing. And when it came out, I really felt like it was very, very good. We could easily deploy it. The techs knew what this was and how to work with it. And when they didn't do that with Windows 8, I really felt like, here's the Microsoft that I know.
Right. No, I ran Windows 7 beta version in a corporate environment as my primary machine, and it was great. It had its hiccups. Don't get me, you know, I'm not going to say it was perfect. It was stable, and I was impressed with that. And you were right. And then Windows 8 comes out, and we go, oh, good. We don't want too much change.
No. It's like, yeah, well, I was starting to feel like I was married to a different woman here.
Don't be going all legit on us, Microsoft. All friendly and useful.
Yeah, it got spooky when they started doing things right all the time.
Yeah, no, I hear what you're saying.
The pendulum has indeed swung back.
Yeah. So. Well, speaking of Windows 7, I'm going to use this as a segue here. I do a lot of imaging, and I use an application called Clonezilla. Well, you know, it doesn't matter what application I use, because that's not what the point I'm getting to. It's just a side note. When I do a lot of imaging, I usually do a lot of imaging for a lab. So I'm not imaging just one machine to go to one machine. I'm imaging usually one machine to deploy to like 30 machines. And with Windows XP, when you want to create a default profile, you do your profile the way you like it. You log off. you know, or you create a new user, you log off or reboot that machine, you log back into the other user, you then go into the profile settings, and you can modify the profile, and you can actually copy your profile from, you know, say the user delete, you know, into the default profile, all the data, and you can do a copy. And then next time anybody who logs in, they automatically get that default profile, which is great for a student lab because now you have all the icons you want on the desktop. You have, you know, everything looks the same across the board. The default profile you have made the same. Well, in Windows 7, you can do that, but it's this long process. And I had been working with a couple friends on this, and he mastered it. But it was always a lot longer process than Windows XP, just because of the way Windows 7 was made. Well, I have a Windows 7 machine here, and I thought, I'm only imaging it to another machine. But I'd like to go ahead and make the default profile the same, just because. And I came across a tool today, and I'll have it in the show notes, but it's called... It's called DefProf, DefProf. Hmm. And I thought, well, either this is not going to work or it's going to work. The problem with Windows 7 is that you have to have everything in a row exactly the same. You just can't overwrite it like in Windows XP. You actually have to leave the file structure the same and mess with programs and mess with applications, or it just will break. It'll completely break. So I thought, well, it's worth a shot. So I imaged the machine prior to doing anything with it, after I got all Windows updates and, you know, everything the same. Logged off, created a new profile, rebooted the machine. In Windows 7, you actually have to do a lot more reboots to clear out the processes and to unlock the profiles than you do with Windows XP. Logged in as another profile. This is a simple exe. I threw it in the desktop or on the root of C. And you just run DefProf space your original profile that you want to copy, and it runs through a couple commands, and that's it. I thought, well, that can't be that simple. So I created a new user while I was in my second user, made a third user, logged off, logged in as the third user, and it said preparing desktop. And I thought, oh, nope, didn't work. And boom, it kicked into the desktop, and it worked. I was blown away. A process that I have worked on before, following somebody's notes, taking at least 20 minutes, worked in minutes. And most of the minutes was me just rebooting the machine. So I'll put a show note. I'll put these in the show notes. But if anybody images Windows 7 machines and they want to create a default user profile that's exactly the same across the board, since Windows XP is going away, this works really, really good. And the gentleman who I grabbed this from, his name is David Rowe. I don't know if he's keeping this blog up or not. His last one's in March 7th, but he's talking about user profiles. This guy goes through a lot of different stuff. David Rowe, I'll put a link in the show notes, but this guy's got a lot of good stuff. And I was really, I just happened to stumble across it. I think I Googled how to create a Windows 7 default profile, and I think he was like 4 or 5 pages down in the Google.
Default profile. Okay. DefProf. I got it.
Well, Martin, could have I backed up that user's profile on the XP machine and then put it on the Windows 7 machine? No,
different completely file. It's
okay.
Windows 7 was built completely different from the ground up than Windows XP was. So yeah, that won't work. But it means now that when I have a whole bunch of Windows 7 machines, like we're buying new laptops for all the teachers at a school. That means that I have 25 new laptops coming in. I want to create them all a default profile. That way, on their desktop, they've got Chrome, they've got Google Drive, they've got all this stuff that they can just log into. I can now do it because I can create an image rather than creating it and then having them log in. And then what happens is they log in and they go to launch Windows Media Player for whatever reason, and it goes through all those processes that says, what do you want to do with Windows Media Player?
Okay.
Or you log into IE. Well, what about all these updates? What about all the, not updates, but you know.
You want to make a default browser? Do you want to disable the add-ons? Who do you want to be your default search provider?
You do all of that ahead of time and copy that profile over, and now those questions are gone.
Yeah, okay. Wow. All right, that's huge.
That's across the board for all the machines.
Exactly. Yeah. So I do that on one machine. I image that machine, and then I redeploy that image out to all the laptops, and then I just rename. Now, of course, when they boot up and I'm on the network, I get, hey, same machine name. Rename them. And then join them back to the domain. I hand them out to the teachers. There you go. First time they log in, they're going to get the printers. They're going to get all that other kind of stuff because I've already installed all of these applications for them. And they're all configured at least at a beginning level.
See, because they image our machines at work, but they don't do it. They don't put the printers in there. Nothing. I have to do all that stuff.
Right. Well, I get all that done for the teachers. That way they just log on. Actually, it's done via login script, but I get it done as much as I possibly can ahead of time.
See, don't forget, our machines are coming from Chicago, the headquarters. Well, actually, it might even, well, right now, Chicago might be Michigan later on. But we got facilities all around the country. I'm trying to install this printer that's 15 feet away from me. I'm seeing a list of printers around the country, you know, and, it's pretty cool.
So I wanted to share that. I thought that was a big win for me today.
So you actually have successfully used it to do this, or you have this coming up and this, I mean, you've seen it work, but have you actually done it? And now in history, you successfully used this tool.
Well, I tested it, made sure that the different images are coming up. Before the show started, I got the image pushed to an external hard drive. All I need to do is swap these computers out and we'll go from there. And actually this computer is the HP computers that I've been fighting with for so long that, I don't know if I brought that up on the last show, but, it's a bad hard drive, I think, in the other computer. So I'm going to go get a hard drive as soon as the show's done tonight. I'm going to go grab a hard drive and a 24 port switch. I need the switch for deployment.
Yeah.
But, yeah, so that was a big win. I was excited to get that done. So Def Prof. And it's just simple.
SpinRite didn't help that hard drive.
SpinRite, well, here's the thing. SpinRite came back as no, everything fine. All green. But I go to run DBAN because I thought, well, maybe it's having some issues. And so I ran DBAN, and DBAN would fail. But everything that I read for that error that I was receiving said it's either, you need a PS2 mouse and keyboard plugged in, or you need a PS2 mouse and keyboard plugged in and no Ethernet plugged in, or you need Ethernet plugged in and the sun in this right position. Like everybody, there was, 13 different ways that this could possibly be fixed. And somebody would do something and go, oh, I solved it by, by doing something magical over it and now it works. And everybody goes, oh, that didn't work for me, but this worked. So try this. And come to find out, I think it's a shot hard drive. So
what was the error you were getting?
It said red screen. Red screen with 3 exclamation marks.
Wait a minute. It was under what circumstances I know that I would have remembered this. I know we didn't talk about this on the show.
Right. No. So I was using the HP system restore disks. There's 3 disks. The first disk is kind of like prepping the hard drive and everything. Yeah. The second disk is the OS, and the third disk is
drivers, utilities.
Yeah. And so it's these HP system disks.
Yeah.
So 1, 2, and 3 would go just fine, and then it would reboot, and then it would have the HP screen, and it was installing applications. You could see what it was doing, and then all of a sudden it would freeze. Background would be completely bright red, and it would have a Windows error box, and the title was Red System, a Red Security, and it was just like, what? It was not a Windows error. It was definitely an HP error.
Yeah.
And so I went and I found a USB or a PS2 mouse. I went to Salvation Army, got a PS2 keyboard. I mean, yeah.
I still have a bunch of them.
I didn't have any. I mean, that was the thing. I have PS2 mice and PS2 keyboards.
You know what? If you work on a lot of Dell, especially in a corporate environment, you haven't used a PS2 anything in a decade.
Exactly. So I had to go find a PS2 keyboard, and I walked into Salvation Army.
It's one right there. The e-machine is one right there.
It's $2.99 from the Salvation Army.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, and I got 30% off that day out of some sale. So,
well, you're a smart shopper.
I know. I should have picked up something else. popcorn machine or something. But
you probably could have got a Windows 8 machine for $20.
That's right. Actually, I know that it sounds funny, but every now and then I'll just.
oh, gosh.
Every now and then I swing into Salvation Army just to see what they have, just because people will throw away old routers and old switches and old So you go in there and on the shelf for like $10 is a 16 port gig switch. Like, people toss them. The people who work there have no idea what it is. Yeah. They just tag it. And I'm like, cha-ching. So I walk out with a, you know, a $300 device for, you know, $9.
Very often you'll find really cool, occasionally useful adapters, you know, strange extension cables. You know, you will find very, very unusual things that I know that I will buy things on occasion if it's something that I may have needed the past, will probably need the future once, but I see it for a quarter, you know. Right. It's like grab it, it just goes on the shelf with everything else. Right. Yeah, you
always need a 6X IDE CD drive.
Well, I don't have to go too far for those. I got a pretty healthy boneyard going. But if you don't have a PS2 keyboard, I'm thinking that you're probably wise in that if it's been there for a month, it gets pitched. I have, it's almost a spooky a collection of crap. Those Goodwill stores, Salvation Armies, they're at least fun, at least to kind of poke through and see what you'll find. And occasionally you will see you'll always see something very unusual. I know that a lot of times I'll find a really cool adapter or something where I thought, oh my gosh, I could have used that once. PS2 keyboard. That's funny.
Right. There was like five of them.
I could pave my driveway with PS2 keyboards.
If somebody drives in, clack, 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 clack.
Yeah, that would be cool.
That would be cool. All right, I called it. I don't have a driveway, but I called it.
You called what?
I'm going to pave my driveway I don't have with PS2 keyboards. Right.
So, like, if I did that now, I would just be a poser.
Copyrighted. Because
you called it.
Copyrighted.
All right.
It seems like I always get a PC every now and then. You know, I have USB hooked up to a mouse and it won't recognize
it. I had it yesterday.
And I got to plug in my PS2s and they work.
Even some older computers that have both PS2 and USB, if you try to get in the BIOS with USB, it won't recognize it because it hasn't initialized Windows enough to initialize the USB.
That's my point.
Yeah, yep. So I should keep one around, and I had one around. I hadn't used it in months and said, I don't need it. Chucked it. A month and a half later, hey, I need a PS2 keyboard. Of course I need a PS2 keyboard. Of course I did. I was looking to see what else I had over there. I have a Windows Vista Ultimate. That's right.
Vista Ultimate what?
Big time. Big time.
That's right, like a media center.
Like, install this, or are you talking about an actual machine?
No. I installed this. Brand new.
Well, I have an actual Windows Vista Ultimate machine running.
Oh, all right, you win.
I think you install this. I could pave a road to your house with install discs. Oh, hey. You called it.
Well, not the, I called this the driveway, not the road to my house.
Okay, all right.
So
you remember the that fantastic commercial that when AOL finally kind of like got on board with the fact they were ridiculous. Do you remember that when it's a classic moment in television history, that commercial where I think it was the blue or orange AOL disc showed up in somebody's mail and they were so excited. You remember this? And it's like a husband or wife or I don't know. They're jumping around. It came. And then it shows a collage on their wall of AOL discs. And now with this disc, it was the eye of the fish, and they were excited because this completed the collage on their wall of AOL. It was a really fantastic moment where they were actually, after years of this insanity of sending discs, like they really kind of like you, they decide to laugh along instead of just be laughed at, and which every company should find. You know, once you get to that point, you realize that you kind of like it's nice when a company can do that.
Yeah, they get a chance to kind of laugh at themselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
And realize, you know, and that's good. And then they die.
And then, well, you wish they would. I mean, AOL is still around in some form or fashion.
I've got clients who use AOL still. Like, they log on through their high-speed internet to AOL, and AOL is their homepage.
And they pay like $20 a month for that just so that they can keep the email address from 15 years ago.
Exactly.
And I don't think they have to pay for that, but they do. Am I wrong?
There is still an AOL account, America Online paid service, and with that you get, I don't know what. I know you still maintain that email address from forever ago. You have access to a AOL homepage with, I don't know, what if there's, I mean, I don't know. I'd be embarrassed if I didn't know what that does. But every once in a while, I run somebody with one of these accounts. It's like, how much does this cost? And they tell me, and I just want to melt into the sidewalk. What's wrong with you?
Yeah, they pay. You know, you pay. You know, $35, $45 a month for just internet, for high speed internet.
Right.
And they say, but I pay this for because I need access to the internet. No, you don't need AOL to get to the internet.
He's had the same AOL email account. Well, I just want to keep my email account. Well, so you're paying for it?
I have an AOL email account.
Do you pay for it?
No.
I didn't think you have to pay for it. It's still active, right?
Yeah, it's still active. I haven't logged in a while. It just gets forwarded to other accounts. I don't use it very often. I should. It should be my spam email account. Maybe at the end of the show, if anybody reads me.
I think it should be your professional account.
Martin at AOL. Yeah, that's street cred right there.
Hell yeah, yeah. At least it shows you've been around a while. You probably know it.
Well, I could give my old 6913C5 at CompuServe.net address. Remember when CompuServe was numbers and letters?
I don't have that much street cred.
It was a while there where CompuServe, you didn't get an actual name. You got numbers and letters. That was your email address, which was odd. Anyways, we digress. We digress.
We digressed upon digressions.
Yeah.
I did have one thing I kind of like got into and I thought I really wanted to talk about on the show. Kind of an unusual thing, but actually, well, it involves a relative. So the whole thing is unusual start to finish. But basically the situation is whenever they come to visit me, for some reason, the machine, it's a laptop, it's Windows 7, a few years old, it's generally in good shape, runs fine, doesn't get, it's really just for email and taking putting the pictures on. But I have noticed that every time they come here, it's like, it recognizes that the wireless network here, but it doesn't want to connect automatically. So I have to like kind of, I tell it, you know, well, go ahead and connect. And it's like, okay, well, now I'm connected. I'm like, what's wrong with you? And it'll be fine. And then they go home, and then I get a call. Well, it's not connecting. I'm like, oh, gosh. This happens every time. And I can only tell you for certain what happens here. When they go home, I'm not sure exactly what's going on. And I'll tell you, I've talked about this before, but it's so important to really kind of nail down exactly what the customer's complaint is. Because just because a customer says it won't connect to the internet, you don't really know what that means. Are they connected to the wireless, but there's a network issue? Or they connect the wireless and the network is in their connect and there's no network issue, but there's a problem actually loading web pages. In this situation, after days of trying to nail down what on earth is going on, I believe that wireless is fine. I believe there was no network connectivity issue. I believe they could load and browse web pages. I think that the mail, the local mail client just was not loading properly. And so, you know, when they say I can't connect, that could mean anything. And so you really kind of have to go through the checklist. Well, can you do this? Can you do that? I found it very difficult. I still have not, as many times I've gone through this, I still haven't found many good, I haven't found the proper questions to ask that they can easily answer so that I understand what's going on. I know that I'm still trying to figure that out. But what we ended up doing, I said, just unplug the router or whatever. I said, just, I had him reset it and just then connect to, this is too complicated. It was my mother. All right. It was my mom. She's really good at this stuff. And she knows, you know, she's actually one of my favorite people to deal with on the phone because I can ask her questions and get straight answers. So I don't know why I'm trying to obfuscate any of this, but yeah, I'm talking to my mom so what I had to do, I finally just reset the router. I don't know what's going on here. So she reset default settings. It came back up. I had to reboot the laptop. I could see it and log me in. I said, you know what? Please just walk away now. So ideally when you're doing something remotely, you need to have a wired connection. Wireless is an issue because, it may be flaky. It's definitely going to be slower. You could make some configuration changes and then lose connection to it. And anything that you have to all the things that you do, the last thing you want to do is have to make repeated calls to the client. Do this. Please reboot. Reconnect, whatever that you have to do. You just want to get yourself in a position where you can work on it and call them when it's done. So having a wireless connection, if you can avoid it at all costs, please do. In this case, I couldn't. It really wasn't an option. And actually, by the time I was logged in, I was so happy that I was doing anything. I wasn't about to ask for more upon everything so far. So actually, after giving that piece of advice to never work on it wireless with a wireless connection, now I'm going to tell you what I did to actually get around all this. So
dial-up modem.
Yeah. So dial-up modem. A dial-up wireless router. Do you have one of those there, Martin?
Your dial-up wireless router?
Yeah.
What would that look like?
I actually have one here. It's actually a dial-up wireless router.
Wow.
I'm
going to go to Salvation Army for that one.
That's a unique piece. So,
yeah, it is.
Anyway, what I ended up doing was that, first of all, I knew I could connect. So there's no network connectivity issues. I know that there's nothing wrong with the actual connection to the interwebs. So what I had to do was I just had to reconfigure the router for, you know, the security settings because it was now wide open. And I confirmed that it was the mail client all along that was the issue. And I had to figure out to resolve that. So, first things first, I got the mail client going. It was nothing more than just the default Windows Live Mail, which, you know, Microsoft, they're the best. You got to give it to them because, you know, mail clients have been around for decades. Leave it to them to have something that still doesn't quite work right. You would think that we've pretty much resolved every issue we could ever have with a stinking mail client. But Windows Live Mail does have some kind of weird thing where, for whatever reason, especially if you're changing from one wireless network to another or what, it will actually report itself as being offline, and it will go so far as to ask you if you want to go online, and you'll say yes, and then nothing happens. And so, very similar to going into Internet Explorer, where it says, where you can check work offline, or you could uncheck work offline, which I'm not quite sure why anybody would ever want to do that, but it has these settings, but for whatever reason, you can't actually make it work online. The Windows Live Mail. So I've dealt with this in the past a few times with this machine, and it turns out that it's just something broken with Windows Live Mail, and the fix, apparently, is to actually, you have to close it out, you have to go into Internet Explorer, whatever version is on there, you have to set IE as the default browser, and once you do that, you bring Windows, I don't know if a reboot was required or not, but once you do that, all of a sudden Windows Live Mail seems to have its connections worked out. So it's not enough to actually go into Internet Explorer and see that, you know, to make any changes in the way Internet Explorer connects to the Internet or any of that. You actually have to set it as default browser first. Then Windows Live Mail was happy. I then... like I said, there may be a series of reboots and through this, I don't remember. But I then changed Firefox back to the default browser, and it still continued to work. So anyway, that was kind of it's really been kind of a frustrating thing through the years with this machine. And I know that I could probably use a different, you know, actually a real solution would be to use a third-party mail client. However, like I said, it's my mom. This is what she's using. She knows how to use it. I'm not changing anything, and that's why you do have to work with some of your clients. So that was working. Now, having resolved that, I did have to remotely and with a wireless connection reconfigure the wireless settings in this router, which could be a complete disaster, really, and a painful experience. However, I kind of I had a couple epiphanies along the way, and actually made it pretty easy. What I ended up doing was a lot of routers actually have the ability to, you can open them up and have, and allow for remote, logging into the remotely. So once I, configured that in this router, I was then actually able to log into it from my browser here at home and make configuration changes. And so, I knew that whatever change I made, if the laptop could not successfully connect to it, I could at least put the settings back and allow the laptop to then connect back up. So that's what I ended up doing. I basically just set up in Windows. I just set it up to connect to a wireless. I think I you know how you can go in that wireless profiles and you can create one, and that's what I did. I just created a wireless profile with the settings I wanted, as far as SSID, the security settings, and whatnot. And let's see, I logged into the router from my laptop at home. I made those changes. Of course, I lost remote access to the laptop briefly, but after a moment, it did then reconnect. After the router rebooted, the new settings went into effect. The laptop was already configured to connect to the new wireless with those settings, and it did. And I'd say, not only did that work, it worked very, very well. And the most important thing I did was that when I was finished, I remoted into the laptop. I then logged into the router from the laptop, and I disabled those remote settings, because that is a security hole that you've opened up. If this was going to be something that I was going to be ongoing, that I would be logging into that router periodically, it would be okay to leave that setting, leave that available, with proper security in place. But, I would not, you don't want to open that up to remote access and then just walk away from it and leave that open forever for, someday maybe being exploited. So anyway, that's what I did. That was kind of just a quick thing I went through. The Windows Live Mail, it's a very common problem. If you ever encounter that, that's what I did. I've done it a couple times now. It worked really well. And then as far as the wireless router, I did kind of want to mention that, because that kind of saved my bacon as far as whatever change I made. If I had remote access to the router, I could always put it back. I mean, that's kind of the trick to any of this stuff. Fixing anything, you can feel a lot of freedom making any change you want, knowing that if it doesn't work, you can take a step back and get at least back to where you were.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree with you on the remote assistance. If you are going to need remote assistance to a router all the time, of course, the best way to do something is to use the proper tools to get to a computer on the inside and then from the inside get to the router, as opposed to accessing the router from the outside. But if you are, definitely make sure you have changed the port, the default port. There's a way in there, yes, most routers. And then two, please, please, please change the default username and password.
Yes.
Do not leave that open. Don't use the same port. You're asking for trouble, and the next thing you know, your mom or your grandmother or your aunt or your uncle, whoever has internet, all of a sudden, who knows what can happen? I mean, you could go 100 different ways with it, but yeah, make sure that those get changed.
Are there not supposed to be username?
Well, it depends on the router. Some routers don't have a username. Some routers just ask for a password. Some routers ask for the username of admin. Some routers have just an admin access. Some routers have an admin and a guest access. And some routers don't even have a username. It's just a straight password.
Yeah.
All my router says username.
Well, yeah, and some do.
Yeah, well, my
password is password.
You have an inside man that gets you high-end hardware.
I'm
playing around. That's, yeah.
I'm playing around. The
username actually is username.
And that's what I'm saying. Making a joke.
Just your standard residential off-the-shelf Walmart router, at least, a couple years ago, whatever it is my mom has or some of these others, that you can change the password. You're not actually, it doesn't actually encourage you to do that. You have to dig around to find it. And as far as a username, you have to use admin is what it comes with. So
if my neighbors have an unsecure wireless.
Oh, so you know all about going to people's stuff and changing it around.
I thought about it, but I didn't. That's how I troubleshoot my network.
You just mess with their stuff.
If I can log on to theirs, I know it's something wrong with mine.
Oh my goodness.
I got you. Well, it's the same as, if I'm trying to figure out, if the link is broken here, I just tether it to my phone, that has a good connection. And right? I mean, that's, you're doing the same kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah, just temporarily getting a different ISP to confirm the problem is in this area, and it's, maybe it's right here in this part of your network.
Right, right. It's technically the same, but legality it's not. I'm sorry.
You mean like if Mitch actually were doing this right. without asking his relatives?
Hypothetically, if he jumped on an unsecured neighbor's wireless, hypothetically.
Well, his neighbor is McDonald's.
Oh,
or so Starbucks. It's cool. He just agrees to the thing, and it's cool.
No, Mitch, play along.
Play along.
Yeah, come on, Mitch. That's the time you're supposed to say yes.
Yeah, we're not over at the other place anymore.
Okay,
that's right. This is a real thing now.
Okay.
Well, speaking of securing stuff, one of the other things I found seeing that it's National Cyber Security Month is that we had talked in the past about, and we talk a lot about how do we secure our laptops, our desktops, you know, Mitch and Tim, that was a great thing about how, you know, I know that it was a talk about how to do remote assistance and about Windows Mail, but you brought a lot into that, especially about, you know, securing your router. One of the things that I came across today was how to secure, it says 10 tips for securing your smartphone, and it's put out by Sophos, and I've been a big fan of Sophos for a while. And some of them are pretty obvious, and some of them I thought about for a while, and I thought, well, I kind of do that, especially after making the jump from iOS to Android. In the iOS, you either have a 4-digit PIN. Let's start from the beginning here. Number one says, always secure your smartphone with a password. Now, on the iOS, you either can put a 4-digit PIN or you can put a password. When you get into the Android, or at least my Samsung Galaxy S4, I could do a facial recognition. I can swipe my finger across. You make like a box or a square or whatever you want to do with it. They bring up a thing that says swiping the finger leaves greasy trails on your phone, and that could allow somebody to maybe follow that same pattern.
Right.
So they're saying that a 4-pin is improvement, but definitely, you know, a strong password is ideal. Which makes sense. You made a comment, Tim.
It was more of a groan.
Oh.
I suppose that if you did swipe your way into your account and then set the phone down or the device down and walked away from it, and at that very moment somebody came along, I've seen people's devices. I mean, it's like their password would have to be one swipe, a sneeze, the cat lay on it, and something else. For me, if I was actually reading the tea leaves of their screen. I guess it's possible. It sounds very unlikely, and so it may be grown. That's all.
Well, you're right. You're right. It's also the same thing when you could possibly tell somebody's password by the wearing out of their keyboards.
Right.
The keys on the keyboard. You're right. It's probably improbable, but it still could be there.
It's possible. It's very unlikely, but any security flaw is a flaw, no matter how big.
Right. Right. So,
and since all the world's problems are solved, that's a good place they should focus.
Right. So, number two is ensure that your device locks itself automatically. Well, most devices do that. It's just how much time. You know, if you feel like, you know, you may want to lock your device, you may have it set for 15 minutes. Well, while that makes it nice and easy where you don't have to go back into your device after 15 minutes, what it may mean is in a corporate environment, you forget about that, you walk away, you have a malicious coworker, that coworker jumps on your, you know, your iPhone or your, you know, your phone and texts your mom something dirty. You know, so, you know, not that that's ever happened to me. I had a friend once, but they're saying that 2 to 5 minutes, even if it's a pain, that's, again, you know, a lot of this, and you know, we have to think that a lot of this is there's a line between security and functionality, mm-hmm. and depending on who you are, where you go, what you do, you know, maybe working in a corporate environment, you have to lock your phone down a lot more than say if you're working at a restaurant or something like that, and you have your phone with you all the time. But these are good just in practice to do. Install security software. Depending on your phone, there may be security software. There may not be security software. It's not a huge level of target right now. It probably will be as we're getting more and more into smartphones and tablets. But right now, there are some out there. I've talked briefly to Door-to-Door Geek about it. And they're kind of like, yeah, but they don't. It's hard. It's, you know, it's a hard thing to scan for malicious software on a phone. So, only download apps from approved sources. This would be, you know, don't get, you know, apps from somebody in Hong Kong or something like that. That's not, doesn't go through either, you know, the Apple Store or the Play Store or something like that. You know,
right? There's a big difference between getting something from the Google Play Store or getting something third or fourth hand that comes from a Dropbox.
Exactly. Exactly.
Dropbox thing. And yeah, and if Android's actually going so far to ask you to, and I think it's actually, you actually have to change this, I believe, in the developer areas, but you actually have to tick a box before it will install I'm trying to remember how it's worded. I'm not a huge Android guy, but yeah, I know that mine, it will actually say,
you got to give it permission.
Yeah, you act, and it, right. It'll actually say, how do you want to install this with the, explain this exactly, but yeah, I get two options. Do I install it with just the package installer? Do I install this thing over here, which is like a more secured way of doing it? I'm installing something from a third, fourth party Dropbox thing, and so I have to press this over here. There is a big difference between getting something from a legitimate source that has thousands of downloads and many hundreds, if not thousands, of reviews.
Right. Right. No, I was trying to find that and I can't find it. But, you know, that, and a lot of this is just common sense stuff. You know, if you're planning on rooting your phone or you're getting your own APK from, you know, from whatever site, you know, you're making that choice to go onto it. And so, things like check your apps for permissions. You know, maybe your calculator doesn't need access to the network. I know at one time there was a flashlight app that needed access, you know, that took access of your camera. You know, when you're installing that, you know, a lot of times the apps, at least on now, you know, of course, a month ago or 2 months ago, I moved to Android. So now I see that the box, it says this application needs access to, and it lists out what exactly it is. You know, if you're installing a flashlight app, flashlight apps don't need access to your camera. There may be an issue with that. You may want to go find another flashlight app. Okay.
Well, I figured they don't. I thought maybe they do, just so they could turn on the flash, which is. Well,
but that's not the camera. That's the LED.
Okay.
I don't know.
You know, I'll tell you what though. Yes, you should actually look at all of those and say, is this appropriate? Does it seem right? At the same time, the list is now so long, it's actually become like every other EULA, and I can't possibly read all that or even care. So I clicked through all of it. So I initially did think that was fantastic. I would look at it, and it had access to two or three different things. And now it's like, the list has become so long. I'm like, whatever. I don't even care anymore. So that,
right.
I'm not saying don't do it. I'm just saying that it's just become kind of difficult.
Yeah. Oh yeah. I agree. And that's, like you said, you know, we're giving these out as just kind of, you know, best use practices.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm sorry. I'm kind of pooping all over it.
No. That's fine. No, that's fine. Because really, you know, well, let me finish the list and I'll come back to that. So, number six, it says, of course, don't miss out on system updates. If you have an operating system to update, you know, depending on what it is, you know, again, we're back into the, hey, don't everybody jump on board with, you know, the next latest iOS update or the next best Android update. If you have certain apps that could get broken, best use, stay current, because more than likely they will fix patches. They may break specialty apps that you have installed to do certain things, but for the general public, there are security patches. Be aware of any links you receive from via email or text. Encrypt your data. That's a new one to me. I did see that I can encrypt my phone. I have not done that. That, of course, requires somebody to have physical access to your phone. To that, turn off automatic Wi-Fi connection. This will be things for, you know, you go to a hotspot. Somebody there has some malicious intent. You automatically log in because, you know, Starbucks now gives you free wireless, and the same wireless is at both at Starbucks and McDonald's. Somebody there has malicious intent. They do something with your phone. And then turn off Bluetooth and NFC when not in use. NFC is the near field communications. That's the one you see where you can just tap against something, sure, or you get close. I've never used it. Bluetooth, I understand why they're doing that. Most times when you get a headset, what's the default code for pairing up your headset with, you know, your new thing. It's usually four zeros. Yep. And so all you have to do is have something Bluetooth. You can connect to somebody else's computer, you know, or computer to your device by punching in four zeros. You know, so these are just, you know, these are, of course, our best use practices. They're not the end-all, be-all. Of course, you may have something, you may have rooted your phone, you may have jailbroken your phone, you may have certain apps that you run that have to do certain things. You may have a flashlight app that you know needs access to your camera for whatever reason. And it's, but you know it's a legitimate access, you know, and that you know that you put it on there. Whereas, why all of a sudden does my flashlight app need access to my camera when I just threw it on there? So, it's just kind of a best use, but I wanted to throw that out there because we don't talk a lot about smartphones on this show, and I wanted to bring that out.
Of course, the thing with these devices, just keep it with you and don't lose it. That's like probably the best security advice that anybody's ever going to give you, right?
Yes.
Don't put your phone down and walk away. We're kind of getting into this like new world of, hey, okay, this device is actually fairly secure regarding all of the old virus infections, Trojans, and whatnot that we've become very accustomed to and we know how to ward off. We're now getting into this area where we really have to think about the, I can never really come up with the term, but, you know, the social engineering or prying information out of people in new and different ways, like phishing and that sort of thing. No matter how secure the software is that's running, it's only going to be as secure as the person using it, just being wise about how they use it. So obviously, you know, the phishing that. But I think the phone that is at greatest risk, a phone, tablet, whatever it is, that's at greatest risk is the one that's left sitting at the restaurant table when you walk away from it. Just be very wary, not only of what is on the device, you know, like these government employees that leave FBI secrets on the train as it drives away, but be careful of what you have on it, how it's on it, in such a way, like if it's encrypted, if it's not encrypted, and then keep charge of the device. You know, if you had a card with your ATM number and PIN number, you wouldn't just accidentally set it on the restaurant table and then maybe possibly walk away from it. You would keep it secure at all times. And these phones are getting to the point where they can do a lot more than that. And so, and I tell you what, that to me is my biggest fear, is that I'm going to set it down and I'm going to walk away from it.
You know, if you lose your wallet, you can call up the bank company, the DMV, you can get new stuff. You know, you lose your phone. Oh man, not to say that losing your wallet isn't bad, but if you were to, you know, think about it, if you were to leave your wallet somewhere or leave your phone somewhere, which one would cause you more angst? You know, my wallet isn't connected to my Google account. My wallet isn't connected to my BitTorrent sync. My wallet isn't connected to my LastPass passwords, you know.
Right.
My wallet isn't my Google authenticator to get, you know, granted you have to have my password, but you know what I mean? We put a lot of data and a lot of connectivity and a lot of, you know, what do you call that? Just everything is so interconnected between our phones.
It's all synced up.
To our tablets. It's all synced up. So.
Yeah, that's, that is the thing, is that we regularly, knowing or unknowingly, leave the house with a thing that has more personal information on it than we worry about the bad guys taking from our computer. And so, it is an issue. And I'll tell you what, the one thing I wish my wallet could do that it can't, but my phone will, is that there are a lot of applications. There's a lot of software out there that, God forbid, the worst happen, you can remotely instruct the phone to wipe itself. Mm-hmm. And I think Avast has had some.
There's a lot of apps. I'm trying to think. And that wasn't on this list.
Yeah, it's the one. It's actually the one that I actually tried out a couple of years ago just playing around. But I want to say it's Avast. I'm not sure. But yeah, I mean, it had a lot of like pretty fantastic features. Where anything you download, of course, it would scan it and you know, tell you whatever it knew about it. It had a number of fantastic features, one of which was you could very easily remote into it from, and I think all you needed was a 4-digit PIN. And without, I mean, and you could have it set off an alarm, you could have it do all this stuff. But I felt like the most valuable feature was that you could silently, you could instruct it to silently factory reset. So worst case scenario, you've lost, you know, the device, but hey, hardware is hardware we can replace all day, but data and that you can't, and you don't want all that information getting in people's hands.
Yeah, I thought that was really interesting. That number it didn't have on this list, 10 tips for securing your smartphone, was not set up remote wipe capabilities. The other day, my wife lost her cell phone, and she had no idea where it was. We have AT&T.
It was lost.
Well, yeah, that's why she didn't know where it was. She lost it, but she knew where it was. All right.
You know what? The thing about things that are lost, they're always in the last place you look.
Well, I signed up for it within AT&T. I signed up for like Find My Phone. Also has the remote wipe, so yeah. Makes me think that, you know, check with your provider if you haven't rooted your phone or you're jailbroken it. Check with your provider to see if they have a tool that will do it automatically. You know, I said Find My Wife's Phone. It sent out a ping to my wife's phone. It's in the house somewhere. It was under the car seat.
Oh,
so you know, it wasn't lost. It was just under the car seat, but. It made me think that now I have the capability that if my wife ever did leave her phone somewhere, we can just remotely wipe it. So I'm surprised that didn't make this 10 list for securing your phone of setting up remote assistance tools.
Well, it was a pretty good list, and we talked about it. If we didn't improve upon it, hey, why even talk about it? That's pretty good. I do know that I guess the only thing I wanted to add was I do know that the thing that I used, it had to be rooted. And so and of course I know this because it happened, but if you are rooted, make sure that you maintain that root through updates. Very often system updates, you will lose root. And so I got into a really kind of sticky situation where this device was no longer rooted, but it was running an application that needed root access to be installed. And I now had a real problem trying to remove it. And it started doing all kinds of really unusual things. So, but other than that, no, it was, I thought it was pretty fantastic. It had a lot of features, but just that remote wipe, it was like, I think you dialed a number and set a 4-digit PIN, something, I don't know. And with a remote wipe, so.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Never heard of that. Cool. I have we were sent a couple emails, and I wanted to get to this. These emails are a bit old, but with last week with Jonathan joining us, we pushed it back till today. So we just have two emails to kind of end off the show. And the first one was from, and I briefly mentioned this before, and I said I couldn't remember his name. It's Alistair. Alistair has emailed us before, and he's actually sometimes in the chat room, and I see him, and so he's a good guy. But he... remember a couple weeks ago, I did an all-nighter doing the email propagation, and yeah. it didn't go. So he says, thanks for the mention on the show. Just a tip regarding your all-nighter in the email server swap over. If you want to test email flow on a server before changing the DNS over, I normally do the following to test it. And he's got a URL, and I'll throw that in there. But it's basically you use Outlook Express to set up and then just to test email. So you'd use just a plain, simple client to just test email without changing DNS. And I thought that was a cool tip. And I had never done that, because a lot of times what you do is when you change DNS, it's change it and then hurry up and wait. And depending on how fast it propagates, it could be 10 minutes, 2 hours. Typically they say 24 to 48 hours, which when you're trying to do an email over the night, you can't wait that long. So I will throw that in the show notes, but I want to thank Alistair for that email.
Cool.
And then we received an email from Brad Torrey saying, hey guys, I've been listening to the show for a little while now, and I wanted to drop a little feedback. I've noticed a few times that you'll wonder if you're boring people with the details of a tedious repair job. I don't think it's boring at all. I like listening to the conversation, but I also value the breakdown of a problem and situation. So basically, keep it up. I thought that was really cool, because sometimes I have wondered that myself.
Well, sometimes I'm bored, and I'm like, how could these people stand listening to this?
Wow.
And I'm the one talking. Sure. I'm the one. I'm boring myself. I've literally bored myself.
You were looking straight at me, so I wasn't sure if that was.
Oh, I was looking at the camera. I was actually looking at the screen at myself. I was talking. That's what I do when I talk. I don't look. I don't even look at you guys. I just look at me.
They divert my eyes.
I look at me.
All right. He goes on to say.
That was a really nice. Thank you for saying that because that's good. It's good to know.
He goes on to say, I also wanted to relay something that I stumbled upon relating to your conversation on the last show I listened to about data recovery. So both these emails are about me. I just want to let you guys know that. So you guys, it's all about me. I can't remember who it was, but one of you said that you had seen a thumb drive full of shortcuts that the owner was able to open as if they were files previously, but now they're just shortcuts. I ran into a similar situation. A customer gave me a thumb drive with music on it, but they said it was all links, no music. I wasn't about to plug in a random thumb drive into my computer, so I fired up my Ubuntu USB drive. Yeah.
Yeah, good man.
Anyways, the long and the short of it is that while viewing the drive in Ubuntu, the links and the music files were all visible. Back to my customer's Windows machine, only the .lnk files were available. And he goes on and he says, I checked the folder options, but nothing worked there. So I don't know what the deal was here, but back to Ubuntu. I copied the music to another drive, reformatted the thumb drive, copied it all back, and the customer had the music. I never would have thought of this. It just happened upon it while I was trying to keep my computer safe. Thanks for the show, Brad Torrey. That is a great, great tip, Brad. If you have a virtual machine or just a, you know, I mean, a lot of us techs have just a machine laying around. There's a machine sitting right over there that's a very old machine. It does great. It's holding the door open. That way the door doesn't close. My cat gets locked in or out of the room. It's a very old machine. It'll run an old version of Ubuntu. You can just load up those machines and you can just use it as a secure way to just check because probably your computer's, your Ubuntu machine or your Linux machine is not going to get infected with some kind of a Windows virus. But I thought that was pretty cool. And so he was referring back to the vet that had handed me, who had lost his data. And all he had were a whole bunch of shortcuts pointing. He had copied the folders or the music, but he had copied just the shortcuts. He made shortcuts. After this email came in, I had received the drive, and I've received actually two drives from him and did verify that all he copied over were shortcuts. Since then, I have been able to recover all of his data, and he's actually back and happy. I've actually recovered data that he thought he was missing from years ago. So that was very nice. That was good, too. But we thank you guys for both. Thank you guys for the emails and great tips on all of that stuff.
Absolutely. Great tip. I mean, just you fired up an old machine with a bootable ISO just to see what it is, just to make sure it's you can't go wrong there.
No, you can fire up your same machine with a bootable ISO. So.
Yeah, sure.
Well, I mean, I guess, you could.
Yeah. That would be like way better.
Right.
That would be way better.
Well, that would be the second choice. If you had an extra machine, that'd be the first choice.
Yeah. I would say that's like 99% ideal.
Right. But not, you don't have to install Arch, like some of us like to overachievers.
That's, well, we can't all be an overachiever. I am a moderately average, middle-of-the-road achiever, and I'm satisfied. But not like Mitch.
Well, but if you go too high, then you got nowhere to go.
Well, that's it. I always like to have something out there to achieve, something more that I could do. And I will die. I will die with a lot left that I would have liked to have done.
As long as it's in a VM, it's not real. But it really is.
Well, that was see, and I don't say profound things like that either.
Wow, oh. We're getting Geeksters bumper stickers. As long as it's in a VM, it's not really real.
It's yeah.
Mitch.
Unless it, yeah. Wow.
By the way, there's a new tutorial on YouTube from Jay the Linux guy. That's the letter J, the Linux guy. It was just put up 2 days ago on his how he's installing Arch. It looks to be really good.
Okay, we'll get that.
So follow him.
I'll get that link from you, and you can send me. We can put up on the show notes as well. Well, cool. Any final words?
Yeah, actually, just there, real guys? Quickly, I just kind of following up the from before. Here, I'm screen share this. That's what you get when you make that change in Android to allow installation of other things. You then have to, it asks you, you know, when you're installing this APK, it says complete action using, you have to choose the Android package installer or the Google verify and install, where the Google verify install obviously is the more secure one. That's what I was trying to think of earlier and it didn't come to me. So that's all I had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Cool. Cool. So, any final, besides that, any other final thoughts for the week?
That's it, man. That's all I got.
All right.
That's it.
All right. Well, if people want to get a hold of you, Tim, how can they do that?
Yeah, I am in like Tim in the Podnuts forums. I am Tim Bauermeister on the G+. Or you can email me. I am Tim at realpcrepair.com.
Very good. Yeah, very good. And Mitch, if people want to get a hold of you?
MMAN046@gmail.com.
Nice. Nice, nice. And if you'd like to send Geeksters an email, you can send it to us at geeksters@podnuts.com. If you'd like to send us a voicemail, we haven't had a voicemail in a long time, 7076-PODNUT. We have a Facebook page. We have an Amazon link, podnuts.com/Amazon. You can get stuff there. It comes back a little bit. We get a little bit of money back on that. You can check out podnuts.com for all the other shows that are part of the Podnuts Network. Everything from Linux to Windows to hard drives to, I don't know, maybe one day we'll have a farming show. I don't know. But if people want to get a hold of me, yeah, I know. I don't know. I just threw it out there. Like podnuts.com/tillering or I'm not a farmer, so I don't even know. Harvesting? I don't know.
Yeah, that's my John Deere is better than your old.
That's right. Podnuts.com/John Deere. IH, yeah.
Well, I'd rather push my John Deere than drive your IH. Oh, you disagree, Mitch? He's shaking his head. No. I think we have a thing going. Come on.
I can't say it on this show.
Oh, okay.
And I have no idea what you guys are talking about. I mean, I know what a John Deere is, but I don't, whatever that other thing is, I don't know. I'm assuming some kind of a tractor, tiller, something. I don't know.
It's a sad state of affairs where people don't even know where the roots of farming came from, International Harvester. I am done with you, sir.
Bauermeister out.
Wow, a second chance to drop my real mic. I can't believe it.
All right. And if you want to get a hold of me, martin@obandocomputing.com. Maskill in the forums, Maskill on the IRC. One of these days, I'll probably change my name, but then people may not know it's really me. So I should change my name and then come in as somebody else and start smack talking about myself and see if people join in. So just to see who my true friends really are.
We do have 18 people in there, by the way.
If I come in as either Tater or Rambo, people will know.
Tater.
People will know. Tater. All right, guys.
Tater.
So, like I said, geeksters@podnuts.com, 7076-PODNUT. If you want to give us a voicemail. Well, I think we're done for the day because this is spiraling out of control. Mike, Tim's about ready to do a third mic drop.
Yeah. So. No, I mean, Tater. That's the name you get when all the names are gone.
It is. So, it is.
Anyway.
All right. All right, guys. Have a great week, and we'll talk with everybody later.